It's amazing how the shadow work actually allows us to hold more hope, more possibility, more, you know, because we can be, as you said at the beginning, we can be, the more we could be with the grief, the more we have capacity for joy. By doing the shadow work, you increase your capacity for gratitude for everything because you're in the totality of your body, of your being.
Exactly. And not only are you bettering relationships with other people and getting closer to them, but you're bettering the relationship with yourself. And the cool thing about shadow work is that I was able to switch it up from a dark room to a light room and just go...
Change your life.
Yeah, I changed my perspective immediately. And it's because I had that coping strategy as a child for moving to three different countries that I was like, oh, my life doesn't suck because I don't speak the language. This is a new opportunity.
Yeah.
A new start.
Hi, welcome to another episode of the Mark Rose Podcast. Today I have Violeta Benson. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Was that weird for you to say instead of just flowing, Viola Benson?
No, because personally I call you Violeta.
That's true. Okay.
So, but I know that you're known on the internet as Viola Benson.
Which is catchier.
It is. It's kind of like, I wonder if Tom Cruise's real name is Tom Cruise. It's probably like Tom...
Tomalea Cruise.
Tomalea.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, watching, Violeta is the host of the podcast Almost Adulting, as well the very famous Instagram account Daddy Issues.
Yes.
And returning guest.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. And today we are doing this podcast from my house, which is why we're currently sitting. Well, I guess it's mostly audio, but we're currently sitting in our house. And it's also the first time we finally met face to face. We've been internet friends this whole time.
Yeah. And I think about, I have a friend who we met on the internet and he came to Canada to visit me. And when he was at the border, the people were like, what are you doing in Canada? He's like, I'm going to meet this guy, Mark. And he's like, they're like, how do you know him? And he's like, from the internet. And their guy's like, the border guy's like,
you're going to get murdered.
Right. Now it's so much more common. But
yeah. I meet all my friends on the internet.
Me too. I met my wife on Instagram. That's how I met her years ago.
Right. And then you rematched on Tinder.
Yeah. Well, that's the fake story. But yes.
Sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, I find that the internet, you get to find your tribe. You know, you have this opportunity when your local or close community, maybe you're bumping up against the values that they have. You start to find people who are curious about the things you're curious about, you know?
Well, that's because it kind of goes back to cave days, is that people don't understand that one thing that all humans yearn for is, well, two things. One is to be understood and seen, but the other one is for community. Yeah. And that's why a lot of times you hear the word community and it feels so catchy, or the minute someone uses the word community, you're like, yeah, I want to be part of it. And you don't get why. And it's because it goes back to caveman days where you needed to be part of a community to survive.
Right.
So that was like full on survival skills. If you're not part of that community, a lion will eat you.
Dead.
So you had to form a community for your safety. And now it correlates to us humans in general, we need to be part of a community to feel like we belong and all that. So the internet definitely has space for that and a room for that, where you find your community. But it can also hinder you, because when you're finding that community, it's also, you could stop yourself from growing. Because if, let's say, you are very hateful, whatever, you'll find your community on Reddit.
Yeah,
and it'll make you feel good because everyone feels the same way you do, but it stops you from growing because now there's no one to challenge you, to tell you that maybe you're not always the victim, that maybe your viewpoint is not the correct one. But the internet is also beautiful because if you wanted, you could find, you know, the challenging stuff. But I have noticed that in the past, whenever there's things that I'm passionate about, and my sister and I start sending each other things about that, eventually I'm like, well, it feels like everyone feels this way then. It must be, it's not just us. And she goes, no, V, that's because we are surrounding ourselves purposely, specifically around other people that feel the same way we do. So we're getting that confirmation in our brains and that validation, but that may not be the case.
Yeah, it's so true. I remember when I first was like obsessed with understanding relationships for myself, I thought everybody wanted to be happier and have better relationships and be curious about themselves. You know, I got that like drug of starting to ask myself questions like, why do I do this? I didn't take time till my late 20s to even stop and ask a question like that. And when I started to ask it, I was like, everybody wants to know why they do stuff. And then I realized actually a lot of people have no interest in having better relationships, having a better life. And so what you're saying about being in these, you know, I guess as they're aptly called, echo chambers, it's so important that we also expose ourselves to diverse thought. Because if we then we become reinforced and even more rigid in our beliefs, you know?
I mean, it depends. I mean, some things when it comes to growing, you know, it kind of reminds me of that trend last year where the trending word was a narcissist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And everyone's a narcissist. Every person you meet and they go, my ex was a narcissist.
Every ex is a narcissist.
All my exes are narcissists. Everyone I meet, if they're mean to me, they're a narcissist.
Yeah.
And then they would just go, and then other people knowing that's a trendy word, they start making videos. Your ex is a narcissist if he did this, if he blinked. If he wakes up every morning and has a thought, he's a narcissist. If he has legs, might be narcissist. A narcissist. And everyone's like, that's confirming it. Confirmation bias. Perfect. Right. Thank you so much. So, wait, what was my...
That's interesting because...
What was my point?
Well, what I love about that is that shows you how it's so easy to hop on to some sort of thought process about a behavior that instantly makes me the victim of that behavior, which is not minimizing the experience truly with a narcissist, but that we're like diagnosing 50% of people with it when it's like the percentage of the population that has true narcissism is, I would imagine, much less.
2%.
Yeah.
And it's a 2%.
So
I looked up the
research. You looked it up.
I like facts.
I know you do.
I love facts. I love research. I'm a very analytical person.
You're a former accountant. Makes sense. You spreadsheet it.
Yeah, but it's just in general how my brain works, how I process information. I process a bit differently at times than other people since a child. But that's what works for me. Maybe it's my part of my childhood things that I've adapted that has helped me. But it probably has to do with the childhood stuff where I've repressed emotions. So I focus on the logical side of things instead of how things make me feel now as an adult. Because now it no longer serves me. And we'll discuss this obviously today with shadow work and childhood trauma. But now as an adult, it doesn't serve me anymore to always be logical. So a lot of times I have to stop myself and I say, wait, but how do I feel? Like, why is this making me feel this way? But anyway, I forgot again what we were talking about. It's crazy.
Tell me, because I know you're working on a book. Yeah. Starting to write one. Is it about that journey into your childhood?
The book that I'm writing that's going to come out, I would be hoping to finish it by June or July of this year of 2024. And it's definitely a challenge for me because as much as I consider myself a writer, I'm challenging myself now in a way to become a better writer. And I'm challenging myself by being such a logical person. I always prefer giving people facts and research. So I'm challenging myself by forcing myself to be vulnerable. And it's been challenging where I also have to now go back to memories I didn't want to go back to in order to be able to write about it. Because my book is part memoir, part self-help, but it's about how to not be a victim. So even when I that doesn't mean that my whole life I just was always like, not a victim or nothing bad ever happened to me. It's in a way where here are bad things and sometimes this is how I handled it. Here are some childhood things that just from, and now, like right now I'm writing chapter 2. So it was just interesting in my chapter 2, it was just me trying to get into my childhood just to explain a little part. And after I managed to dive into it, I realized, oh, this is why we should pay attention to our childhood memories, because this little incident that seems so minor, but also a moment I got bullied, the way I reacted, I had two reactions from it. The first reaction as a child became a habit that I continued to adapt.
What was that?
So I'll tell you the two habits. So it's two of them. The first one continues to serve me as an adult, but the second one will end up hindering me as an adult, and it doesn't work for me after a while. So it was two things. When I got really severely bullied in middle school, which was another crazy part, I'll say in a second. So the two things are, one, I escape into my imagination. It's my escape from reality. And I just imagine being someone else, anyone but myself. And of course, it sounds sad at times, but sometimes it's just my imagination has helped me create daddy issues as an adult, because it was when I, one of my lowest moments when I was an accountant, not because I was an accountant, because of other issues. One of my lowest moments during that time, I escaped by imagining that I was someone else, anyone but me. And I started writing about her.
Yeah.
And that girl's name was Violet Benson.
Huh.
Which is me, because my real last name, my last name is Cohen. So not anymore, I legally changed it. But I gave her my first name and I gave her a different last name and I wrote about her and everything about her. And she was the coolest girl ever. And because of her, I was able to create daddy issues. And, you know, to some, it was just a meme account. But I was to a point where not only did I not know who I am, but I felt like I was nothing and I didn't deserve to have a voice. Not that I didn't even know my voice, but I didn't deserve to have a voice.
Yeah.
So my opinions, my thoughts, none of that mattered. But when I was Violet Benson, in my imagination, she would post this meme. She would think it's funny. She wouldn't be scared because she's a cool girl. She gets invited to everything. She speaks up for herself. She's rich. All the boys like her. I'm invisible. That's how I felt, of course, to myself. That was my reality. To others, maybe I wasn't invisible. Maybe I was constantly in their way. And that's why I got into that somewhat serious bullying in my accounting firm, which happens very commonly in big, large firms. So.
Oh, so you experienced bullying as well in the workplace as an adult.
And that's exactly when I
accidentally. The dark place where then you created daddy issues.
Which is why, but I experienced something similar that happened to me in my childhood in eighth grade. And I ended up having that same defense mechanism where I went into, escaped into my imagination. So that actually helped me as an adult. So sometimes things that we learn as children can help us.
Yeah.
Some of these coping mechanisms are good for us. So my imagination helped me because it allows me to remain creative and it's good. But the second thing that happened during that severe bullying in middle school, right before I moved to the United States, because I lived in a different country, was a freeze type of reaction where basically when things started to go really bad, I would just freeze. Not just freeze, I can't speak. So I can't even say my words. And I remember in middle school, when it got really bad and my ex-friends, they would just have people in the school throw things at me and like call me names and they made sure no one speak to me. But like the way I've moved through it, I never cried. I didn't do anything. And like when they would throw things at me, I would just sit there and it would just be hitting my head. And obviously as an adult now, having to look back and write about it, I was just heartbroken. You know, because as a child, like I never processed it. And like even speaking about it now, I feel so, the pain that I feel speaking about it, it's anger, which has to do with shadow work. Because I feel anger in myself. Like, why didn't you speak up? What's wrong with you? But when we discuss shadow work today, it's part of giving our younger self grace. So, you know, people throw things at me and all that, and it just hit my head and I just sat there quietly and I allowed it. And I didn't realize yet, but I was developing a coping mechanism when things don't feel safe, I just exit my body.
Yeah, you so disassociate. I'm
not exactly. Yeah. I disassociate. I'm not in my body and I can't even speak. So I'm frozen. I just sit there. Because why? Because somewhere deep down as a child, the way those people were treating me was validating how I felt about myself. And that's where I just completely disassociated. And then later on in life as an adult, without realizing, that coping mechanism for me continued on. And now as an adult, it stopped serving me because it was getting me in trouble, whether it was in my friendships or relationships where there's a conflict and I just get silent and I freeze and the other person feels, do you not care?
Yeah.
Like, where's your, I need your, no, because there's no emotions because I'm shocked and I'm thinking, how do I get out of this situation?
Yeah.
And it's not because I think this person's going to hit me or anything, or I think I don't agree with this person. I can't speak.
The nervous system is activated.
Exactly. Yeah. And it also happened to me. I got in a really bad car accident and my car was totaled by a drunk driver and these neighbors ran to my car. And I remember it happened again where I was in so much shock, I couldn't speak. And they said, what happened? Can you talk? And I was just, and they go, what's wrong with her? Are you mute? Why can't you speak? And I literally couldn't.
Yeah.
And it took me years afterwards to not feel anger again and shame towards myself, because I thought, I'm strong. Like, why was I so weak? Why couldn't I say what happened? Like, that's not how I think I would react in situations. Why did I react like that? Well, because everything who we are as adults, we are formed as children.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. And
of course.
I'm sorry that happened to you as a kid. You know, I don't think, unless you're the one who experiences bullying, which I experienced, you know, my own versions of that in grade 7, grade 8, grade 6. And I don't think unless you've experienced it, you really actually understand the deep impact of it. And how even just that, because you think, like, if you were to speak up as they're throwing stuff at you, it could mean more intensity, raising, you know, now then it hits you. You know, like, there's so many things that can happen to you.
Yeah.
But by you freezing and disassociating, at least and leaving your body, there is some sense of, I'm not even here.
Exactly.
Know? Like,
I'm
I am
just waiting for,
quote,
it to
unquote,
be over.
Safe. And then how as adults, because I for sure had freeze as an adult. I remember being in a conflict with my now wife, and we were both fighting about something, but it wasn't intense. It was just hard. And I remember both of us laying on the bed, unable to talk. We were both in freeze. And I had so many words that were like moving through my stomach, and they didn't make sense. And they were just all wanting to erupt. And then they stayed here.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, but just like, just use them. But I couldn't.
Yeah.
It actually took me years to do that. And I'd actually even say still, like the other day, I was just flooded about something. I was activated. And.
But that's also your, I wouldn't say it's as bad. I would say that's also your brain trying to process and find the words. So if anything, a lot of times when we have different reactions in conflict than our partners or our friends, we assume that the other person's way is the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times people who get silent or anything like that is because they respect the other person so much, they want to give you the best response ever. So they're holding themselves back in order to calm themselves down or in order to process their thoughts properly so they can deliver the best response that they can. So everyone reacts differently. So I would say give yourself some grace. Don't be too hard on yourself for the way you respond.
I like how you structured that, because it definitely feels like there's about 14 million algorithms going on trying to figure out the right words. And it's true, I do want to get the right words. And I think in a lot of ways that's also because I want to be right, so I feel safe. Oh. I want to make sure I get the right words out and I actually communicate how I actually feel. So there's what you're saying, there's that processing going on. But it's almost like I need to verbally try to get the right words. Like I have to use a bunch of words and then reformulate. Do you know what I mean?
I definitely do that too, which is why that's why sometimes people say, okay, let's take some space, or they say, let's journal, they write things down. And once they write it down, they're like, oh, now it makes sense. But a lot of times I think it's easier for me. I sometimes have to say a lot of things, a lot of words in order to figure out where I'm going with it.
The other day I was reading some work from John and Julie Gottman, who are like the marriage and family, the marriage experts in terms of research. And John Gottman it's such a beautiful quote. He was saying, the model that really great couples, like successful couples do, is that they live by the principle that when you're in pain, the world stops and I listen. And he said, nice. Isn't that so beautiful?
Yeah.
And he gave this example where he's like, his wife, Julie, he said, you know, when I notice myself getting defensive, which I like, I'm more defensive for sure. He said, I grab my notebook and I say, tell me more. And he just takes notes of how she's feeling. And I'm like, oh man, that is so good. And I just think of how beautiful that is to think, like, when someone you love is in pain, the world stops. And that pain is the most important thing. And I just think about what's possible for us relationally if we did that.
Well, it's because a lot of times when someone is hurt and is in pain, usually, I mean, they could be crying, but usually the way they express, a lot of people, including myself in the past, they express it with anger. And then it's hard for the partner or the other person on the other end who's getting the lashing or feeling the guilt criticized and all that, or, yeah, it's hard for them to humanize the person that's in front of them, that's making them feel a certain way, and yeah, be like, oh, they are so angry, and the way they're feeling, it's only because they're hurting, and they're hurting really bad right now, and I should be there for them. You don't, it's hard for us as humans to have that instinct, because our instinct is what this is making me feel bad, I don't like it, versus, oh, they are angry because they care, because they love me so much and they're afraid to lose me, or they're hurting so bad and that's why they're so angry. But this is why I've read this before in the past, and I've heard it from somewhere as well, where, and again, this is a very hard thing to do when it's happening. It's, yeah, hard. It's easier said than done.
Yeah.
Because our emotions can be high. But the person in front of you, when they are angry or cruel and all that, like when they're the meanest, I'm not saying forgive them, but a good analogy to that would be, it's kind of like when there's a five-year-old child and you're their mother, and the five-year-old child is standing on top of the stairs, and me as the five-year-old, and the five-year-old goes, you know what, Mom? I am leaving. I wrote a letter and I'm leaving. I will not be here anymore. I'm put up with your attitude. And then, you know, he's 5 years old, and the mother is going to look at this five-year-old and she's going to think, oh my God, my baby, he loves me so much that he is purposely putting on this drama, putting on this act. He wrote a letter. He said, I'm leaving just because he loves me so much. I affect him so much that he needs my attention. He's, yeah, yearning for my attention right now. And you don't think, oh, shut the F up.
Right.
The five-year-old, you think, oh, right, poor baby, come here, it's okay. So that's the same thing that's happening with your grown ass partner. And again, I'm not saying that you
have
to. It'd
be nice if we oriented to them from, I wrote a letter and I'm leaving. You know?
No, but like, I'm not saying that it means that every time your partner is being really cruel, and, you know, let's say you upset your partner and they go, well, that's where you're balding and your dad never loved you. You have to be like, oh, okay.
Right, right.
She's just a five-year-old little baby. It's okay. I'm not gonna. Right. It's more, oh, they need to work on themselves to do some shadow work. They need to figure out why they're reacting this way. But I have to remember, they're hurting. It's actually not about me. Their cruel words right now, their rage, it's not about me. So I'm not going to take anything they're saying personal. I'm going to take note to their behavior that they, yeah, should work on.
Yes.
But what they're saying to me, I'm not going to believe it right now. They're acting like I'm going to walk out of this door. We're done. I don't love you, which words that you shouldn't say regardless. But if that's happening, oh, I'm not going to take it personally, because we can do that same thing where we go, oh, I don't love you, blah, blah. What happens? Now my childhood instincts are happening. Oh, she's making me feel like everyone else I've ever dated makes me feel. And now you make it about yourself and they made it about themselves. And that's why the conflict, you part ways.
Yeah, you end up in that. Now your childhood wounds meet each other. But you're, yeah, right. If you can stay as much as you can, as you said, easier said than done, as little, not activated, or as little activated as possible, and be able to, because what you're saying is, like, really successful couples at least have, even in conflict, a reverence for one another, yeah, a respect. And you're right. Like, if someone is putting the relationship on the line, you can't actually go deeper and be more vulnerable. But you can, as a loving adult in a relationship, say, I will not tolerate your threats to the relationship. I know you're hurting.
Yeah.
I see that. I'm willing to work through that with you. But that I won't tolerate. And that's actually calling out the adult in the other person. That's why I love the name of your podcast.
And it's also loving. It's also showing love to yourself, because in that moment when you realize, oh, this person just hurting, they wouldn't act like this, be this dramatic. They wouldn't be this angry if they didn't care, if, right, they didn't love me. It's not a way where you have to be, oh, then I forgive you. But it's more, oh, then I won't take their words personally. Then I won't have to go now into a spiral,
right,
of thinking, oh, yeah, this is because my mother didn't love me. No one ever loves me. People are always going to leave me. I'm not going to spiral, because I know it's not about me. And because I love myself and I can think clearly, I will respect myself. I'm going to set boundaries. Hey, when you calm down, we're going to talk about this. But I'm not going to put up with that again. I know it had nothing to do with me, but knowing myself well enough and respecting myself, that's not something I'm comfortable with speaking to that way.
I gotta say, whenever I've been in a relationship with someone who's called me forward with that level of feroz, which I like to call fierce love, mm-hmm. I'm like, I wasn't always ready for it in the moment. And some of those people became exes because I didn't have the capacity to face my own shame. Mm-hmm. But I can look back now and see all those moments where someone tried to fiercely love me with the truth. And it actually unlocked something that years later, I actually was able to confront because it started there. Do you know what I'm saying? I just wasn't. It's like when I'm sure people will listen to your stuff or read your stuff and they'll be like, I wish I'd found that 5 years ago. And I'm like,
yeah,
yo, you weren't listening 5 years ago because all these messages are available in different places.
Yeah.
But when you're looking for it, you know, as they say, when the student's ready, the teacher arrives. You keep mentioning the term shadow work. And so I want to just dive. Do you have something else to say about
that? Well, I just want to mention one thing about that, because I think I'm so similar in that regard as you. When I'm working on myself, I really try to pay attention to everything. And then I'm just at that point, make the accident of it spilling too much over into everything where I think everything's my fault. And then you're no longer allowing other people to take accountability for their actions. It kind of removes any wrongdoings. And sometimes you can end up being with someone where they're fake working on themselves, but they're working on themselves in the way that they're telling everyone else what they're doing wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to be with that person. You're like, oh, I didn't take it in strongly enough because I wasn't working myself that time. Well, maybe that person was wrong because they were projecting their own shit. And maybe they actually didn't know what they were talking about. An ex is an ex for a reason, usually, unless there's exceptions, obviously. But
always true.
Yeah. But aside from that, When it comes to you being so self-aware, I do want to make it very clear, and this is part of the shadow work, is that two things can be right. You can be hurt by what someone did to you, and you can still decide to work on yourself. A lot of times people think, well, if I'm not going to react the way I normally react because I'm supposed to work on myself, then that justifies how this person treated me. No, you're allowed to have your emotions. So you can still be correct where you hurt me. I don't like this. But now you're going to work on yourself by not reacting the same way you normally react because maybe it's a little too intense or maybe
like perpetuating the cycle.
It's not working out for you. You know, so in that way, you are still letting that person know you hurt me. But now, because when we do that sometimes, when someone hurts you and then you fight back with rage, what happens in the end, and this is before you do the shadow work, a lot of times is where you end up now apologizing for how you reacted. And now it takes away from what the person actually did to you because, you know, maybe they stabbed you a little, but you shot them in return. And now then now it's no longer about what they did to you. Now you're just sitting there apologizing and then they never have to take accountability and you never resolve that issue.
So you're taking hyper accountability and the other person might not be doing the same, meeting you in that same
way.
Yeah.
And that is when we dive into shadow work. Like shadow work, I mean, I think the word itself sounds so scary. And even
it
when
it does, it sounds like, oh, that's the dark part.
Right.
But that's because we associate dark with bad.
Right.
Yeah.
That is true. We do associate dark with bad, right? We always say, be the light.
Yeah, which that's, to me, I'm like, I think about how much richness of my own personal development came from grief, came from rage, came from anger. That in a society that only celebrates ascension and light and rising, it's like, what about descent?
Yeah.
What about going into the darkness? And I don't know, for me, my like, even my experiences in my teen years, my childhood, I now can go into those things and feel, I think I've cultivated the richest things from those. Do you know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah. Well, because people are always so desperately searching for the end of all end, which is happiness, and it's the joy and it's the rewards, and none of us really like to enjoy the journey because the journey, it's annoying. It's
totally
I'm crying, I'm disappointed. Ugh, how many more people do I have to keep dating?
Right.
It's too much. And so you think, oh, just give me the happiness destination. But we can't, unfortunately, as cliche as it is, you can't You can't have sun without the rain. Can't have a rainbow without the rain. And it's the same thing. You can't know joy without the grief.
So
you can't appreciate. And it's the same reason why you had to date certain people. You had to have certain experiences. When I look back, I'm not upset that I was bullied. It's an experience that taught me something and helped me develop, you know, my defense mechanisms, helped me grow as a person. When I looked back, I was just angry at myself that I didn't stand up for myself, that I should have handled differently. But you know what? I now gave myself grace because I didn't know any better.
Right. And I think about why in my experience, your content is so resonant with so many people is one, you're very vulnerable and transparent about your process. And I think that's rare for people. Wow. Like they or we can't identify a feeling that we have and a pattern that we have till we hear someone speak out their pattern and their solution. And so I think you do, because I know you're very dedicated in your solo episodes and stuff to always sharing what is currently your process and what you're learning. And your podcast is about the exploration of all this, your journey, really. Mm-hmm. And I think what resonates so much for people in my experience is the fact that you live your transformation very out loud. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it.
You do. You don't hold back. And I think it's really beautiful because it's like even what you said about your coping strategy as a kid to go into an imaginary land is actually what birthed daddy issues, which what birthed your liberation from accounting, which what birthed your liberation in self-expression, and what birthed the integration of Violetta Cohen with Viola Benson and Violetta Benson now, which is a nice merger.
Violetta has actually always been my full name.
It's always been, yeah. And so I think that's just like I always like to consider that the things that you do with your wounds actually become your superpower when they're harnessed from a light place instead of a dark place. Do you know what I mean?
It's hard for people to do that, but actually research shows that in our emotion, the only emotion from all of our emotions the only time when we don't second guess ourselves is when we feel rage. So a lot of times when people feel rage,
that makes sense.
They end up, you know, channeling the rage into hating other people, hating the world, hating their life, being a victim, wanting bad for everyone else. And they don't realize that rage is the only time you don't second guess yourself. So if you channeled rage into yourself, you know what? I'm so angry. I'm going to start over. Instead of figuring out how I can ruin their lives, I'm going to ruin their lives by succeeding.
Right.
And that's the only time you don't second guess yourself, which means you're going to make decisions faster. You're going to start moving forward. Those things normally you'd be too afraid to take a leap on and try. Yeah. The rage is the only time you will actually do it.
I love that. I've never thought of that. Because
I love rage.
I do. From a transformational perspective, I remember going through a breakup where there was a betrayal. And I remember being on a treadmill like a couple days later. And I just kept turning it up. And I remember thinking like, I'm going to take this grief, this rage, and it's going to be the most transformative, most potent energy I've ever used. And that was before I started writing about relationships. But it allowed me this opportunity because who I became through that breakup, because I got to the place exactly you're saying where I was like, never again. Never again will I betray myself and then end up betrayed. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. I love it. I mean, maybe it's my Adderall or like my lack of sleep, but I love hearing that. And for me, words matter. And I guess you are right in a sense that I'm transparent, even though I am logical and I like to be in control of everything, including how I present myself. But I feel everything I say. And I feel also words from other people. And you know, so when you're even talking about your journey, I feel it because I can relate and I'm like, yeah. And I used to feel embarrassed, you know, to be able to feel every word. But that also is what makes me, not to toot my own horn, but a talented writer.
I think a healthy level of pride is important.
Thank you.
Knowing what you're good at and owning that is an indication of healthy self-worth.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't look at everything you've created in the world and be like, I'm not very good at marketing and social media. Like, you're clearly very good at it. As spring unfolds in the Northern Hemisphere, I am swapping out and putting away all my winter essentials so I can gear up for some spring and summer temps. And a key part of this transition is replacing my cozy winter duvet with something lighter. And the Cloud Knit blanket from Cozy Earth is my top pick. This blanket strikes the perfect balance. It keeps me warm during the lingering spring chill, yet it's light enough for the rising temperatures. What sets Cozy Earth apart is their commitment to quality and comfort. Every item they create is exceptionally soft and designed for temperature regulation. Plus, the machine washable feature ensures convenience without compromising texture. In other words, no snags on the textiles like the knit of the Cloud Blanket. Crafted from premium materials, Cozy Earth's products are ethically made, reflecting their dedication to responsible production. What truly resonates with me is how Cozy Earth goes beyond creating fantastic products. They embody values like living well and serving others, and weave these principles into each item they produce. Speaking of their serving heart, Cozy Earth has generously offered for our listeners a massive 40% off discount on all their products. Just head over to CozyEarth.com and use the code Groves at checkout. Again, that's CozyEarth.com and use the code Groves for 40% off. How would you define shadow work?
Shadow work was coined by a man named Carl Jung, who's a Swiss psychiatrist. Right?
Yeah, I think it was a psychotherapist. He's a psychotherapist or a psychiatrist.
He's both.
Yeah, Jungian. Jungian theory is his.
Right.
Yeah.
And it sounds darker, crazier than it is, but it's literally just you facing yourself. And then a lot of people think, well, that sounds extreme. I don't have time for that. Or I've been working myself, so it's not happening. So what happens? Like, what is shadow work? Well, shadow work eventually is going to start leaking. Wait, I do want to mention one thing. Carl Jung, the way Americans spell it is J-U-N-G, and it just kills me because you would think it would be pronounced Jung, but Americans just,
they like to play. We like to mess it up. We never know what's going to happen. Americans also remove the U from a lot of words. I'm Canadian, and we use British spelling.
I spell British, too.
Yeah, so all of a sudden you'll be like, you know, use a word with a U in it, and they're like, what are you saying? There's no U in that. And I'm like, actually, there is.
Yeah. For... And they're like, oh, tongue. Yeah.
How many miles is that away? I'm like, okay.
Tongue spells tongu. And knife spells knife. And you're like, why?
That's so good.
For
that's
what?
Funny.
It just bothers me. Sometimes.
Language is hilarious that
yeah.
way.
Yeah. But that's also why I'm so passionate about my writing and I've been working my writing is because that was a new challenge. My whole life it's been a challenge for me where I always thought I was insecure and doubtful of my writing skills because English is my third language. So now I get to prove something to myself.
I can't believe it's your third language.
Oh, thank you.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you.
So you're practicing your writing. And in the correlation, though, I'm curious because I know you said that one of the ways that you've been able to, I guess, a survival strategy was to be more intellectual, more in your head.
Well, that's just how my brain works in general.
Yeah.
But it probably has to do with when I disassociated so many times, maybe it forced me to then just use logic and analyze. But for me, I always kind of analyze a situation where as long as I can understand why people do what they do,
yeah,
in a weird way, I can forgive them. Not in a way that I can forgive them, but it's somehow I don't take it as personally.
Yeah,
if I know why someone hurt me, then I don't attach it to myself as much. I'm like, oh, it's because they're this and this and this way. So it's not personal.
Yeah, like you're contextualizing their experience.
So just in a way to help me feel like, oh, it's not because I'm a bad person. It's because they're dealing with their own things. Yeah, I will forgive them in a way where we'll be friends again. But now I'm not going to go through and spiral.
Yeah, I see that.
That way.
How has your exploration of your shadow, what does that look like in your life?
I think it definitely entered into the relationships that I have. But okay, so when it starts to spill over and it starts to feel overwhelming, there's basically four ways to tell if shadow work is right for you.
Okay.
So the four ways have to do with, one, if you feel stuck in your life. So if you feel like you're stuck in your life, it's because you need to explore something. You need to start figuring out what's going on that's making me feel in a rut or yeah. like I'm not moving forward. You have unresolved issues you have yeah. to work on. Then number two, if you have this exaggerated anger, meaning that the punishment doesn't fit the crime. Something happens and either you react in such an explosive way or you see red and you just want to burn bridges within 2 seconds. And normally you know it's happening because you regret it within the first 5 minutes after you reacted, 10 minutes, an hour, whatever. Months later, years later, you hold that weird regret. The third one is when you experience guilt or shame. It's that gut feeling, that sinking feeling in your stomach where something happens, a situation, and you feel disgusted with yourself. And it becomes a point where you just want to ignore that situation. You want to ignore a person. You want to ignore that part of yourself. You don't want to think about it. So feeling those gut guilt or shame, that's one of it. And then the fourth one is basically when you are judging other people. So whether you're judging other people or situation because you're actually subconsciously insecure. So your insecurities are coming out and that's why you're being judgmental, or you're projecting. You are judging someone. You hate, I hate how loud this person is. Why? Because you're projecting, because you secretly hate how loud you are. So those four things are where if this is starting to leak out, you may need shadow work. And the thing is, you have to be, not only you have to want to do the work on yourself, you have to be pretty emotionally intelligent to be able to go through the process. And you have to be very self-aware as well. So if you're not a self-aware person, for example, if you constantly overly react, but you don't feel that weird guilt that we all feel 5 minutes later, you think, yeah, I will burn that bridge again. Yeah. I'll do it all over again. Then you're not ready for the work. You're not ready for shadow work. And sure, it's going to keep working for you until one day you'll push everyone away and you're going to be all alone. And hopefully it might be too late in your 50s or 60s, 70s. And then you'll be like, huh, I have no one else to blame anymore.
Yeah.
I guess now I'm all alone and it's my fault. Now I'll do the work. So I hope anyone listening, whatever stage they're on in their life, it's never too late to start now.
Right. Well, I think in that, even in the outcomes that seemingly we are a victim of, which I'm not negating true victimization, which I think often these conversations are interpreted as, you know, moving out of victim mindset is somehow bypassing the experience of victimization.
Right.
But really what we're saying is you could be the victim of something, but you can't change that it happens. So you might as well change, like take the gold of the learning from it. And so, you know,
it's for you. That's what people don't realize. Well, oh, you're telling me I've never been a victim. How dare you? Of course.
Right.
Again, you can do, it can be both things. You can, you can feel like a victim because what happened to you sucked.
Yeah, it's
and
not
that
fair.
Wasn't nice. It's not fair. But you can also now, you can't change this person, but you can change yourself in a way how you react. I'm not saying don't get offended, get over it. No, but you're kind of like, well, why does it hurt me so much? What is it triggering in me? Why do I react this way? Why am I always putting up with people like that? So now you go back to yourself. You're like, okay, let's figure this out. So that's where you work on yourself. So it's not that you're not a victim, but getting yourself with a victim mentality is in order for you to move forward in life.
Yeah, if you're in a relationship, which everyone's in a relationship, whether it's romantic or not, all your relationships, you're responsible 100% responsible for your 50%. And so like what you're saying, you get to this age 50, 60, 70, 80, and you realize that you've burned every bridge. You're the common denominator in every relationship in your life. And you can blame everybody else for the reason that you have no connections anymore or no one understands you. There's an interesting correlation between narcissism and being the victim or like feeling unworthy. And what is at the center of both of those is that the self is centered, which I think is a really interesting thing to play with, which is not to say that being in a victim mindset is narcissism. It's just to show that the correlation is both a centering of the self. And I think it's really correlated to being developmentally stuck as like a 2, 3, 4-year-old, because in that time of your life, the world is about you. So like if your parents let you down, you can either choose to see your parents as fallible, unreliable people, or you as being not worthy of being shown up for. But it's too confronting for a child to think my parents are not reliable. So they internalize it. So everything that occurs to you in your young years really gets internalized in your own belief system right. about yourself.
Which is, that's where shadow works comes in. It's about these behaviors that protected you and saved you as a child, that these behaviors that allowed you to be, to get to where you're at safely, but now it's no longer serving you as an adult. Now you have to change those behaviors up. So it's just a little bit different. And the whole point is that we are, why is shadow work important for anyone? Is because not only do you better yourself and you grow as a person, but you will then have deeper, better relationships with other people. And it actually allows you to grow deeper, more vulnerable with your current partner. So it's beneficial all around, and the relationships you have, because if you don't want to do the work, but then you're sitting around, you're saying, well, I deserve the best. I only want to date the best. I only want to have the best friends. But you keep attracting not the best people. Guess what? Because you're not the best.
Right.
We are a mirror of ourselves.
That's a deep truth.
When we date people, when we hang out with people, we are holding a mirror to ourselves. So we are constantly mirroring ourselves, whether we're mirroring behaviors of ourselves that we don't like, or we're mirroring our past trauma. So you will not attract the best person in the world, whether it's a platonic or romantic, if you're not the best version of yourself. If you're not taking care of your little trauma, you're going to, I just don't know. Like, I only attract narcissists. Well,
right.
I'm not saying you're a narcissist, but let's figure out, why are you constantly repeating a pattern where someone is making you feel a certain way? Like, what's going on? Figure it out so you can work on yourself so you can attract someone better.
Yeah, I remember J.P. Sears saying, instead of asking or pathologizing or diagnosing people as narcissists, maybe look at why you are a match for them. Which, well, like, that's a powerful, that truth, that what you also just said, those truths are deep. And if you can sit with them, you're free. If you can't, you're imprisoned.
The reason you're a match to a narcissist, because narcissists are not picky. They will go with anyone. The reason you're a match for them is because you choose not to walk away. Because right. something in them, you were trying to prove yourself to them, or you're trying to fix them, or you're trying to love them. And if you did the shadow work or the work on yourself, then you would be able to, not that you will never approach a narcissist, someone with narcissist tendencies ever again, but you, this time, after doing the work on yourself, knowing who you are so well, you will be able to discern who these people are much faster.
If one of those four things or all of those four things are coming up for me, what is the recommended steps that you have for people to begin to explore their shadow?
So basically, there are five steps on working on your shadow work. The first one is saying it's there. So admitting your shadow work, that you need the work, that you have a shadow, giving it, saying it's there. Now it's there. Let's identify it. So the second one, identifying your shadow. How can I identify it? Well, there's three different ways to identify it, which you look at your projections or your triggers or your patterns. So your projections, which I just previously mentioned, what is how you view the world. Because in the end of the day, we project ourselves onto the world. So you think, so if you're walking around, you're saying, the world wants me to fail. It is you viewing yourself that way, making the world seem that way. That's what's happening. But of course, if you're like, I'm not projecting, I'm just a victim. Great. Then live your life that way. Never grow as a person. Good for you. I don't know what to tell you. Now, the second one that I was saying, there's projection, then there's the triggers. It comes out with how everything's triggering me. So instead of you reacting, oh, I don't like that, that's so triggering for me. Well, why don't we identify? Okay, so you have these triggers. Let's identify them. Why is this triggering for you? Why does this trigger something in you? Where is it coming from?
Yeah. Great.
The third one is patterns. Look out for patterns. So when you're identifying your shadow work and you're trying to figure out where it's at, you look at your patterns then. And your patterns are, well, I just keep dating men that are cheating on me. Or I just can't keep a job. Or I feel like I'm stuck in my life. Or I'm always putting myself in situations where I regret them afterwards. Mm-hmm. Or why am I always in this situation? How do I always end up here? Well, your patterns are here to tell you something because you're repeating something over and over and over again because it's a universe telling you, pay attention. I'm going to keep giving you the same thing over and over again until you fix something about yourself.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty cool. So that's how you can identify by looking into these three things and finding from there where it's coming from. Then the third one, after you identify it, now it's time to face it.
Oh.
So first, you admit it, it's there.
Yeah.
Then you identified it, but now you must face it. So how do you face shadow work, or you face now your issues? By giving it a face, whatever it looks like to you. Let's say it looks like the devil. The most disgusting part of you is the devil. That's been the problem. You gave it this, you created mountains out of little road bumps. You gave it the ugliest face. You were so disgusted you can't look at it.
Yeah.
So now you face it by giving it a face, by giving it your child, your younger child self face, by giving it a five-year-old person's face where you, when you look at it now, because when you look at something ugly, you can be hateful towards it.
Right.
Because you hate it. But now, you gave it the face of someone or something that you love.
Yeah.
And that makes it harder now.
That's such a simple transition.
It's so simple, but it makes it so much harder now
yeah.
to talk to yourself the way you do. Because you won't look at something or someone that you love and be, you're disgusting. Like, how dare you even have these feelings? How
right.
dare you? It's suddenly you go, oh my God, it's just an innocent little thing. Like, it doesn't know any better. The same way when I talked about my childhood self, and how I wasn't mad that they bullied me because I was, and that's where, I guess, like in your book, When We Wear the Masks in chapter one, which will come out in
April,
that's one of my masks is my perfectionist self where I should have felt sorry for myself. I should have been a victim and I didn't feel sorry. It's more, I can't believe how pathetic I was. I can't believe that I allowed these kids to bully me. I can't believe I just took it. It's disgusting. But now, if I gave my disgust a face and just like I see my five-year-old baby face or just my little cat that I'm obsessed with pancakes and I want to say, how dare you? You're so weak. You're so disgusting. I'm not going to speak to that way.
Yeah.
I'm like, you didn't know any better. Of course you just took it because no one taught you. This is what you did to feel safe. This is what you did to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So facing it is so important. So now after you face it, which is number three. And number four is, well, now what? Well, you seek help. So your help is, there's three different things you can do. You can journal your progress, your process. Every time those emotions erupt, every time something happens, you journal it. Journaling really helps a lot of people. I personally don't know how I feel until I write it. Mm-hmm. I call myself a writer. I think everyone in this world is technically a writer.
Agreed.
Yeah. So some people just publish it.
It like gets
don't.
It out on a page so that it's not just sitting in here.
Yeah.
It's
and you get to also formulate. See like where you're at. You get to understand yourself better.
Cool to read back to later.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The second one is meditation. You meditate. You put yourself at peace, whatever you need to do to meditate. And the third one is therapy. Look, shadow work can be very painful because you have to visit all these parts of yourself that you don't like. For some people, the process of going through their shadow work feels simple and easy. But there's going to be other people who feel loads of pain and hate and all that. And then people always ask, how can I tell the difference then between just where I'm harming myself at this point and I just hate how can I tell the difference between now just experiencing lows of negative emotions or me actually doing shadow work? Well, you'll know because one of them is you going through all the motions, feeling those emotions. They're hard to go and to do it on your own, which is why therapy is so helpful. I recommend for everyone in general.
Yeah, agreed.
But you then see the light through the darkness. You give yourself grace versus negative emotions. You are just ruminating. Now you're ruminating and you're stuck in a pattern without realizing and nothing's coming good coming out of it. You're just self-sabotaging, you're ruminating, and you're just knocking yourself down. That's how you can tell the difference between where you're taking it, how far you're taking it, and if you're actually doing the correct progress. And then lastly, the last step of shadow work is applying it in your life, but accepting that your shadow will forever be there. Because mm-hmm. it's not something that goes away. Just the same way as us as humans, we walk around, there's a shadow always following us. It's the same thing. But now you live with it. I'm not embarrassed anymore. Oh, this is how I react. These are my defense mechanisms. I'm able to catch myself, but I'm not going to hide in the closet because it's a part of me. It got me this far. It got me to where I am. So I'm thankful for it. I'm going to change it up a little, but I'm accepting that it's a part of me. So being able to just accept and give yourself grace, that's part of the ending of shadow work.
That's beautiful. I think about how that relates to my experience of exploring shadow, like the steps. I didn't have them so well labeled out. I remember just really rejecting a part of myself in my early 20s. And when I was in my 30s, I was doing a therapy weekend and I was meditating in the morning and I had done a process where I'd forgiven this 20-year-old version of myself. And in the meditation, I could feel, as I was sitting there, I could feel the 20-year-old version of me come and sit back with me.
Aww.
Yeah, it was like visceral. And I love what you're saying, that it will forever be with you, because there's wisdom in that 20-year-old who didn't know better, who made poor decisions.
It survived. Your younger self did something in order for you, who the version of yourself back then, to help you survive. It's defense mechanisms that were beneficial for you as a child. Then as an adult, they stop making sense. So it's the same thing as, you know, we look at cheaters as terrible people, and obviously I never say with the cheater, but being labeled that can be very hard for people who actually feel the guilt and shame with that.
Yeah.
So they can do the shadow work to go back and figure out, why did I cheat? Because 10 out of 10 times, it never has to do with the other person. It has to do with yourself, where I have to self-sabotage.
Right.
I don't feel safe. I felt insecure. So instead of communicating, I did what I know, what I usually do. Okay, let's go back. Oh, my dad used to cheat on my mom. And I guess that told me that, I'd rather cheat on my boyfriend now than watch him cheat on me.
Right.
Like, oh, okay. So I think it's so beautiful. And yes, it's painful at first and you are going to hate certain parts of yourself. But when I was doing the shadow work, and it goes a lifetime journey, is for a part of myself I didn't even know I was struggling with, which was, I never cried about the bullying in that eighth grade. I thought I was so strong for just taking it. And then if I've ever mentioned it in passing, even with my mom, who looked at me with painful eyes, because I stopped showing up to school the last month because they told me they're going to beat me up if I show up to school again. So I just said, okay, then I won't be there. And I would just hang out by myself for 8 hours every single day outside for the last month before we moved to the U.S., So I was, the teachers kind of allowed me to just not show up anymore because they knew we were leaving. But I never told any adults what was going on. I just thought as a child, like, oh yeah, I should take on all this pain because I didn't understand it. So I would hang out by myself. And I remember I never looked at it in a way that I felt bad for myself. It was always, I mean, yeah, you know, kids are kids. Like, yeah, they threw stuff at me and they told me they're going to beat me up. So I was like, whatever, I don't care. And I just always told myself that's how I felt until the day, which was a couple of months ago or a month ago, when I sat down and I started writing and I had to really sit and remember that memory. And suddenly I was just...
You could feel it.
Yeah, I think maybe I was watching some TV show and they had something similar. They showed bullying and normally I let it go and suddenly I saw the bullying. I just started crying.
Wow.
And it was crazy for me that took me 20 years to feel emotion. And first I felt this shame and embarrassment because I was thought, why am I crying? Like, it's eighth grade. Why would I cry about that? It's eighth grade. That's such a joke. And it's so long ago. And it's not affecting me. But if I never cried from my younger self. And then I remember when I was so young, I didn't cry because I was so scared of crying because I thought, if I cry, I don't know how to stop. So I just like never cried. And it stays in you and it stays in you. And you just, it's like a backpack. It becomes heavy and heavy and heavy. And eventually it spills out into everything in your life. What happens when you're so strong and you don't need anyone, where you push everyone away? And this, it's actually one of the masks that you learn in chapter 1 in his book, where it's the independent mask.
That's right.
Yeah.
So tell me, through all this shadow work that you've been doing, but also the journey that you've been on, especially since I've known you, what have you recognized about the value of emotion?
So yeah, one of my favorite things that I thought was really cool for someone like me who loves knowledge is the fact that our emotions have information for us. And that is, jealousy reveals what we feel entitled to. Fear reveals where there's danger and we need to pay attention. And I love that one, mm-hmm. especially if you're a person like me that freezes, because mm-hmm. it's my fear. Then after that, we have guilt. Guilt reveals where we can do better. Shame reveals where we lack the capacity to be humans. Mm. Then grief reveals the capacity of our hearts. Resentment reveals where we have expectations. And last but not least, anger. Well, that one reveals more about ourselves than it does about anyone else that we're angry about, because it's coming from somewhere. And yeah. I love that last one too. That's my favorite one.
I don't think we actually give enough value to anger, but anger is what creates boundaries, what saves ourselves, what, if it's rage, shows, you know, where we might.
Anger is so important, because anger, I always say how anger is not a real emotion. And that's why I feel like the other ones, like jealousy reveals what we feel entitled to, resentment because we had expectations, but anger, instead of revealing something, a key word, it reveals more about ourselves. Yeah. Anger reveals more about ourselves than it does about other people. And that means I'm angry because I don't feel loved.
Yeah.
I'm angry because I'm scared of what's about to happen. I'm angry because I'm jealous. I'm angry because I'm resentful. So I think anger, the reason it reveals more about ourselves than anything else, is because it's other emotions hiding under anger that comes out as anger.
Because it's more acceptable in some places. You know, there's a saying that anger is a secondary emotion.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why I love anger. Because for me, because I struggled with, as a child, I didn't cry. Obviously, that became a habit I adapted. So I used to think, well, if I cry, I just won't be able to stop.
Yeah.
If I cry, then I have to feel sorry for myself. I don't have time. I have to be strong for everyone else when no one asks me, especially I was 14. No one was asking me to be strong. And I always felt, well, my sister's already so expressive, then there's no room for me to express my emotions. Her emotions are enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Since I didn't learn how to cry and allow myself to feel, because when you cry, you're giving that part of yourself room and space. You're telling that part of yourself is like, hey, it's okay. And people always say when you cry, you're weak. And I saw this somewhere else where when you're crying, it's actually because you've been strong for too long.
Mm.
And you can't hold it in. So because I got used to not crying, what happened? I would feel anger when someone would wrong me, when someone would hurt me, and I would react with rage. And then when I finally looked deep into it, oh, I'm angry because I feel pain. I'm angry because I feel abandoned. I'm angry because I feel like you're not hearing me, you know? And I think when you dissect that, it's giving your younger self grace. And I think it's really sweet. Like now when I talk about it, I feel an endearment to my younger self.
I remember hearing somewhere that, and I think this goes both ways, anger is sad's bodyguard. But I also think sadness is anger's bodyguard. So like if you weren't allowed to feel anger, it'll often show up as sadness. If you weren't allowed to feel sad, it'll show up as anger. So it's kind of interesting how those interchange because you need some way to protect yourself. So like anger is instantly significance. You know, people usually listen when someone gets angry or they withdraw or take away the hurting they're doing, whatever it is. I'm in all this journey into your emotions and inner child and now through your childhood experiences. I know you're using that to channel writing.
I'm
a book.
Still learning about myself. I think that's the key to relationships. The key to relationships with other people, platonic, romantic, in the relationship with yourself, which is going to be the longest relationship you will ever have. So break up with yourself as many times as you want, but you guys will be getting back together. And in that relationship, the key to all three of these relationships is being curious. So as long as you continue being curious about the people in your life who you love, whether it's your friends, your family, coworkers, and so on, you continue being curious about your partner, the rest of your life, not just, oh, well, we got to know each other, now we got married. No.
Right.
You're still changing as people. You continue being curious. And as long as you continue being curious about yourself, you'll continue to grow as a person. So I'm still, for me, my journey will never end. I like learning new things about myself. I like understanding why I reacted this way. I like also giving myself grace. I like all that. And in the past, when I used to get angry instead of cry, when I used to get angry, when I was feeling pain, the thing that happened right after that is when I finally would cry.
Mm.
So you know how you see sometimes those people who get so worked up and they just start crying? So it's not like I would be angry where I wanted to hit something or be mean. It's more I'm so angry and I'm just, and I just start crying because I don't know how to express myself. But now I'm like, okay, I'm upset. I'm hurting. I'm in pain. Okay.
Yeah.
Grace.
Grace. Grace is one of my favorite words. I think it's something we all need to, I want to get it tattooed.
Grace?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get that. I get a tattoo of my social security number so I never forget it. I'm kidding.
So what are you, I know you're working on writing a book. What else are you working on now?
I mean, writing a book is, I would say, now I'm like, shit, what else should I are be you working
doing? Oh yeah, I just triggered the perfectionist in you. You're like, perfect. Wait, is that not enough?
Well, it's actually silly, but I'm not working on it as much as I should. I'm trying to. One thing I want to work on this year is actually to have more fun. That's one thing my friends told me that I should put as one of my goals for this year, because I do tend to sometimes isolate myself a bit or work too much. Or even when I'm not working, I punish myself by being like, well, I didn't finish, so I'm not going to reward myself with going out.
Yeah, you did just say I should.
Okay. So, you know, sometimes it's not about wanting to, sometimes it's not always going to be about these goals where I want to do this and this and this, because how you treat yourself and rewarding yourself and taking moments to enjoy. Because, for example, when you came to my house today and you talked about the view, and I was the view of my house, and I was so busy setting everything up and it went over my head, and I made a comment, Oh yeah, I guess I forget sometimes to appreciate the view. But we do the same thing when it comes with things that make us happy and joy. It's interesting when it comes to those two extreme emotions between happiness and sadness. When we feel happiness, it's in passing. We feel it, but we don't allow ourselves to really experience it. It's like, yeah, I'm happy, but I could be happier. Right. Yeah, it's great, but it's not like that. It's not a big deal. I mean, whatever. Anyway, now I'm going to complain about this. But when we're sad, we hold on to that emotion. Yeah, I mean,
we listen to music. We
ruminate in it. It's the worst thing to happen. It's going to take me a week to get over it. Like, we really hold on to it. I wish we would do the same with our happy emotions when something good happens. Or, for example, the view. Because when I first moved to this house, I first lived for 6 months just upstairs because I moved from a small apartment and I was still so used to a small space. So I just lived in the room upstairs, which is my office now, but there's pretty much no windows in there. And the two windows there is, it's the smallest light comes into it.
Yeah.
But it was okay with it. But I was walking around constantly gloomy and sad, because I was creating an environment of gloominess and sadness. And my mom said, Violeta, the rest of your house, every single room, the rest of your house has a balcony and has a view. And you chose the one room that's dark.
Yeah.
So of course you're going to wake up feeling like life's not great. Of course you're going to wake up thinking you're going to have a bad day. She said, if you move downstairs where you see a beautiful view, mountains, these birds, how can you ever wake up and think, oh, my life sucks? You're going to wake up and you're going to think, wow, I'm so lucky to be here. I'm so lucky to be alive. And I said, okay, let's see. And I moved downstairs and I woke up the next morning and I was just like, wow.
Mom is right.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And sometimes it's the smallest little things. You change your environment. I changed my environment, but going from a dark room to just an open one. And I thought, wow, I'm so lucky to be here. Not only did I get to, I'm so fortunate that I got to buy this home for myself, but like nature, man, like nature is so cool. And these beautiful mountains, they're just here for me to view. And how can I think life sucks when God was able to create something this beautiful.
Right.
And I suddenly started to view things differently. Plus, it's like colors. And that's the same lesson where people have in their environment. Like, I hate my boyfriend, and I hate my friends, and I hate my job, and life sucks. Okay. Have you thought of switching up your friends? Switching right. up your... And so it's like, oh, I'm depressed, so I'll need all these medications. Not that doesn't mean you don't need them, but switch up your environment. See if maybe that makes a little difference.
It's amazing how the shadow work actually allows us to hold more hope, more possibility, more, you know, because we can be, as you said at the beginning, we can be, the more we could be with the grief, the more we have capacity for joy. So, you know, by doing the shadow work, you increase your capacity for gratitude for everything because you're in the totality of your body, of your being.
Exactly. And not only are you bettering relationships with other people and getting closer to them, but you're bettering the relationship with yourself. And the cool thing about shadow work is that I was also able to pay attention to which coping strategies actually helped me as a child. Like, I was always very positive and forced myself to be positive. But guess what? That actually helps me still as an adult.
Yeah.
Where I was able to switch it up from a dark room to a light room and just go.
Change your life.
Yeah. I changed my perspective immediately. And it's because I had that coping strategy as a child. For moving to three different countries, that I was like, oh, my life doesn't suck because I don't speak the language. This is a new opportunity.
Yeah.
A new start. And that helped me right away to be able to switch my perspective so quickly. And then the shadow work also helped me see the things that are not working for me, like freezing.
Yeah, not helpful.
Yeah.
But was helpful. For the people, thanks again for coming back on. And
yeah. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, so my goal is to have more fun this year, give myself more grace, be kinder to myself. And I'm working on my book. It should be out, I hope, the end of this year.
Great.
Once the publishers work through it all. And I will then be doing touring and things like that. So that. And I'm just looking forward to... Honestly, yeah, I'm trying to look forward to having more fun.
Yeah, play. Where can people find more of you?
So people can find more of me on my meme account at daddyissues_ if you're into laughs, or my podcast, Almost Adulting, which we have new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. We have usually from solo episodes where I focus on a specific topic with my research, or we have a guest as well. And if you want even more of me, we then have my subscription podcast, which is... new episodes every Saturday on my subscription podcast.
Great. Perfect. We'll make sure all those links are in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone for tuning in. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any
episodes. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Bye, guys.